Here is one of a series of talks by spiritual leader Lola McDowell Lee, spanning two decades from the early 70s through the 90s. Lola was a Zen Roshi whose Rinzai lineage included Dr. Henry Plutov and renowned Zen master Shigetsu Sasaki. Lola was a religious scholar as well as an ordained Christian minister. While the talks are focused mainly on Zen and Buddhism, Lola drew on many spiritual traditions, including those of Jesus, Plato, Lao Tzu, the Hindu Vedas, Meister Eckhart, and Gurdjieff.
When Bodhidharma, who was the 28th successor of Buddha, went to China, he found there was a religion existing, which is Taoism. And Bodhidharma used Taoism in his presenting Buddhism. So the two religions made a unity. They became married. So the and then the between Bodhidharma and Wei Ning, who was the sixth patriarch in China, there developed what is called today Zen. In China, it's called Chan, Chana, using the Indian or the Sanskrit word for meditation, which is Chana. And the Chinese pronounced it Chana, and or Chan. And so the Japanese people, when it was brought to Japan, they couldn't pronounce Chan, and they called it Zen. So the word means meditation. But in this tradition, there is a great deal of Taoism. And Taoism is a very wonderful thing all in itself. It's very natural. It's of the earth. People look to nature. So, and then the early Chinese masters were pretty tough. But we find then in this Taoistic movement a book by the name of the Tao Te Ching, written by a Lao Tzu about 2,500 years ago. And then there is his successor, his student, a man by the name of Chuang Tzu. And very difficult to understand, but a tremendous sense of humor. They called him the genius of the absurd. He was seemingly so illogical at times, so nonsensical, that he was absurd. One day, there was this little monk by the name of Hui Tzu, who said to this Chuang Tzu, "All your teaching, it seems to me, is centered on what has no use." And Chuang Tzu replied, "If you have no appreciation for what has no use, you cannot begin to talk about what can be used. The earth, for example, is very broad and vast. But all of this expanse, a man uses only the few inches upon which he happens to be standing at any given time." Now suppose you suddenly take away all that he is not actually using. So that all around his feet, a gulf yawns, and he stands in a void with nowhere solid except under each foot. How long will he be able to use what he is using? And the little monk said, well, it would serve to have any purpose. It would cease to serve any purpose. Nothing would have any purpose anymore if you couldn't use it. Because you couldn't use it because you couldn't move. And Chuang Tzu then says, well, this shows the absolute necessity of what is supposed to have no use. Now, there are times when we find ourselves in some confusion because life doesn't seem to be very logical. It doesn't go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It skips around. And not only with this logical of skipping around, but the opposite view does not always remain the opposite view. You meet someone that instantly you don't like, and then you have this image of that person, and then all of a sudden you find out that this person does do some very wonderful things, some very kind things. See, and it doesn't fit with your image. Now what are you going to do with this? It's confusing. Or you meet someone that you like very, very much, and then you find out that they do some things that you don't like. And now what are you going to do? Opposite view should remain opposite. It should remain opposite, but it doesn't. No. We have in these opposing points of view, here and here, what Aristotle called the law of the excluded middle. There's all this nothing in between, this which we won't even look at most of the time. And in this, if we bring it all together, we want to say, well, left isn't right, and right isn't left, night isn't day, and day isn't night. You know, that's how we want to think, because that's logical. But life itself implies always the opposite in itself. In life, I mean, in thinking, it's the opposite is the opposite most of the time. But in life, the opposite is not the opposite. In life, it is complementary. And without this complementary, nothing is possible. Left complements right, and right complements left, doesn't it? See? And then you're going to have the sound of two hands. Without silence, how would you know anything about sound? This is a tremendous silence we live in. We don't hear it because the mind keeps chattering and chattering and chattering. And then we are so focused on the sounds that we hear. And the sounds that we hear should make us appreciate the silence more instead of distracting ourselves away from it. But we're focused on the sound and we forget the silence. But without the silence, there would be no sound. Or there would be, you would hear the first sound that you ever heard, and that would be the last sound also. It would continue your whole life. And that would be ridiculous, wouldn't it? because the first sound that you heard was the one of you crying when you came into this world. When we read a book, or when we read something like this, you know, we look at the words and we read the words and we forget there's a sheet of paper on which the words are written. And if it were not for that white background, that sheet of paper, you couldn't read anything. See, silence is the background for the sound, and the sheet of paper is the, or the book, you know, again, the leaf of the book, is the background for the words that you're reading. The complementary, the seeming opposite, is necessary. So we begin to think this way a little bit so we can open our minds that everything, left and right, is involved in living. See, we don't keep ourselves pinpointed on our little boxes. You know, this thought is a box, and this thought is a box, and this thought is a box, which limits us, you know, huh? Don't keep yourself hooked on your limitations. We have a tendency to, you know. Now, if you understand this, let's say, mysterious process of existence, it is a process of existence, the moving through the opposite, through the complementary. See, light moves through darkness, and darkness moves through light. And light and dark, heaven and earth, you know, light and dark, in the Chinese viewpoint, you know, and someone once called them the two hands of God. The opposite gives balance. It gives a tone. Because it is the background. You can understand this, and you can understand this Chuang Tzu. The Taoist tradition is based, in a way, on this complementary of opposites, what we call a polarity, North Pole and South Pole. Huh? And then we have all of this in between. The Tao, which is normally translated as the way, but the Tao, that which is, existence and non-existence, that which is, the Tao. And there are patterns in the movement or the motion of this Tao. The interplay of the polar opposites through each other. And they called these complementary poles, they called them yin and yang. It is the movement of yin and yang in Tao that brings about change, this interplay between these two. But it also limits change because they can only go so far and then they have to come back. It's like a pendulum moving, huh? Yeah. So we have limitations for change. And as they say, the yang moves, having reached its climax, retreats in favor of yin. And yin, reaching its climax, retreats in favor of yang. And in the Chinese view, all manifestations of Tao, the the way it is, of thou, are generated, all these manifestations, everything that you see and hear and everything else, are generated by this interplay, this, think of what it must be on a universal level, this tremendous interplay between these two polar forces. And that's a very old idea. The original meaning of the words yin and yang meant, on the shady and the sunny side of the mountain. One mountain, one is in the shade and one is in the sun. And they don't move, but the sun moves, and this has happened. And then this has happened. And then this has happened. It gives us an idea, of the relativity of this concept. That which is now dark, now light, now dark, now light. What it appears is still Tao. It just appears this and then appears that, and appears this and appears that. It's relative, but it is Tao. Or, if you want to say, God. Now, from the very early times, these two archetypal poles of nature were represented not only by bright and dark, or light and dark, but also by male and female. So we have the firm and the yielding. And we have the above and the below. We have heaven and we have earth. Yang is the strong male. It is the creative power. And it is associated with heaven. Whereas yin is dark and receptive. Female, maternal element, and is represented by the earth, the roots. In the realm of thought, yin is the complex, intuitive mind, and yang is the clear, rational male intellect. We use our minds these two ways, don't we, with the left and the right brain? See, don't say that's the male mind that belongs to a man. Don't do that at all. Yin is the quiet, contemplative stillness of a sage, of an old master, And yang is the strong, creative action of a king. The male is outgoing. It's the intellect, objectively focused, out there. But he has within him this other aspect, the hidden female, which he must come to know to be in balance. And the female, the receptive, has within her mind. We don't say intellect in this instance now, but mind, the male aspect of the woman, which she must come to know to be in balance. Balance, it's a nice word, isn't it? How to be in balance. If this were a world of all men, disastrous, wouldn't it? If it were a world of all women, wasn't it Philip Wiley once upon a time wrote a book? Something about that. It was all women. It was a disaster, too. It's an impossible situation. The complementary is needed. We need its attraction. It's a magnet for us. It helps to pull you out of yourself, to bring you out of yourself. It is one of the greatest aids that you have in understanding yourself. And when that opposite of ourselves is denied, there is trouble in River City. Also, we must realize that these masculine and feminine characteristics of the polarity are not neatly separated and, this belongs to a man and this is how a woman should be and so on. But they do occur in varying proportions in both sexes. We can have a very masculine type of woman and we can have a very feminine type of man. And it's okay. You're not necessarily perverted. It's okay, huh? All people, said this ancient tradition in China, man and woman go through yin and yang phases. The personality of a man or a woman is not a static entity. It is rather a moving phenomenon which results between this interplay within us of this feminine and masculine aspects. And we should know which one is coming to the fore and which one is receding, and then which one is coming to the fore and which one is receding. However, in the past centuries, our patriarchal society, our patriarchal culture, hasn't allowed for this. We have a rather rigid view we have had, that all men are supposed to be very masculine, and all women are supposed to be very feminine, and we have this old expression, good boys don't cry. And then I guess there was a time when it was okay for a woman just to faint because this was feminine. Yeah. Corsets were too tight and she'd faint every now and then. She had the vapors. Feminine, huh? Well, that's what they called it. but we have had this distorted view, And so men were given all the leading roles in life and most all of society's privileges. Yeah. There came along a woman, by the name of Florence Nightingale, and she wanted to be a nurse. She had the devil's own time. They weren't going to allow this. And yet she persevered and founded the nursing institution as such that a woman could go and be a nurse and nurse a man. Until that time, not allowed. Men just died. Nobody would nurse them. They weren't allowed. It's the man's world, they said. And women were denied. They were second-class citizens. They were not to be seen. They were hidden in the back rooms. So that in a way, she was not considered part of life. There's an appendage over there. There's something that I own. I own a horse and I own a wife. And she covered her face and hid. In some parts of the world, she's still covering her face, hiding. But at the same time, because she was hiding and covering her face, and this was the kind of society that it is, was, can't quite say used to be, she was given the blame for all of men's troubles. You know, anything that happened was her fault. After all, it says so in the Bible. Eve is the beginning of all of men's problems because she tempted me. Yeah, what a cop-out. As if you didn't eat the apple also, right? Anyway, through this viewpoint, and I think we would be horrified to know at this day and age what really went on back in, you know, in the olden days, I really think. But anyway, because the world became, with this view, very lopsided. No balance to it. It was, all balance was gone. Of course, I will say one thing, that long before we had this patriarchal society, somewhere in that vast, unknown past, there was a matriarchal society where just the opposite was true. Where, there's a leftover thing of this in Tibet. And there's a certain little region in Tibet where a woman has, she's allowed 12 husbands. And each one takes a turn at tilling the soil and supporting her. And she's queen of the May. They do exactly as she says, and no fooling. Otherwise, they lose their happy home. So, as the world turns. Anyway, change is coming about. We live in tremendous times. They're very chaotic, but they're tremendous moving. You know, we're either going to move right or we're going to demolish ourselves. But anyway, the pendulum is swinging. And it always does. You know, it moves from one pole to the other pole. Women are coming out of the home. Locked out of necessity. See, our times force us into the change. Women are coming out of the home. Women are beginning to take a place in society. We were even given the privilege of voting about 60 years ago. We had a right to say something about what was going on. Now, if women can be smart enough, they won't push too hard. You know, just to a place and then just let that pendulum, instead of pushing it all the way up, let it sort of hang useless for a while. And what a difference that would make in this world. Of course, it can't be there forever. It's going to push and be a matriarchal society again. And then... somewhere down the line, you men are going to be riding on top again. So don't worry. Just wait. Change must come about. It's in the natural order of things, change. As the Chinese say, in the transformation and growth of all things, every bud and every feature has its proper form. In this, we have their gradual maturing and decay, the constant flow of transformation and change. Right? Yeah. We are the transforming process, too, you know. Let's not exclude ourselves from this. We are transforming. We are becoming all the time. And as Heraclitus said, you can never step into the same river twice. Times change. You change. It's not even the same you that steps into the river. Now, in order to know anything a little more completely, We have got to look at both sides. And when we look at both sides, we see that both sides complement each other, and there is now a unity. And a unity is what is. We live in a unity and don't know it. We have in this unity ideas about, and so we are one side or the other. We're trying to shift the balance all the time. And as to our ideas, which is thinking, you know, our concepts, nature could care less. She keeps right on, merrily on her way. Changing and transforming and changing and transforming in her unity. This is the yin and the yang in the Tao, this movement. Okay, that's Chuang Tzu. I think he's rather neat. Now I would like to ask you, you think, what does a house consist of? We all live in a house, whether it be an apartment or whatever, you know, it's still our house. What does a house consist of? What does this building consist of? Walls. Walls. We've got walls here, haven't we? Walls are useful, but their use depends on the useless within. The space. You had your walls together like that and didn't have any space, you wouldn't be able to use it. Useless. What is a room? It's space. Of course, we do recognize that space is free. Walls have to be purchased. When you purchase a house, what do you purchase? The walls, the material, the visible. That's what you buy. But can you live in that? Can you live in the walls? Well, the mice could, but we can't. And even they need a little room. We need room. We need space. So what is a house? It is emptiness surrounded by walls. And we have a door. And a door is an entrance. If there are no windows and doors, the sun will never shine in your house. No breeze would blow through to freshen things. The house becomes a tomb. So you keep your eyes open, and you keep your ears open, and you keep your mind open. These are our windows and doors. Not only to the world, but because of how they operate to ourselves. So now a house consists, we have decided, you agreed with me. A house consists of two things. The walls, which are utilitarian, and the emptiness surrounded by the walls, which is useless. You can't sell it. I can't sell the space in here, this emptiness. I can't sell it to anybody. Would you buy it? If I was going to sell you space here, would you buy it? You wouldn't? Because I was about to have an auction. That which has no economic value, this is space. Or maybe you know of a way to sell emptiness. No way to sell emptiness. But we live in emptiness. We live in this emptiness. We live in this useless, seeming useless, in the background of all that we see and hear. It's where we live. We're the background. We are a background. I mean, after all that you see and hear and think and everything else, it takes place in what? Something out there? Something in here, doesn't it? Yeah. Now then, we sit for meditation. What is meditation? Zen, Chan, Jana. What is meditation? What's the use of it? Well, people ask me, you know, does it give you any benefit? Do you benefit by it? And if I sit, what will I gain out of it? They ask about benefit. And they don't understand meditation because it seems useless. Just sitting there doing nothing. Well, how useless can you get, you know? And as a woman said to me once, you know, my son has been sitting in meditation every day for the past 6 months. I don't know what he thinks about when he's sitting there. I don't know what he's doing when he's sitting there. And it seems such a waste of time, and I just don't understand. And you know what I said to her? Too bad. I mean, how can you explain that to somebody who isn't about to look? You know, we are commercially oriented. We are result oriented. I think was the last week I talked about we were goal oriented, instead of source oriented. In a way, we don't really do very much just for the pleasure of doing it. Somebody learns to swim, and the next thing you know, he's in a contest competing. That's result-oriented, Or somebody takes up jogging, and, you know, the next thing you know, why, he wants to outrun everybody else, or run longer than anybody else, or whatever. It's result-minded. Let me have some results. Things in this life that are just pleasure, just pure pleasure, you should enjoy, but they're seemingly useless. See, exercise is a pleasure, and it's good for you, but you know, we've made a business out of it. And there are two types of people. We have the utilitarian, and these are the scientists, and the engineers, the doctors, that type of a thing, lawyers. And then we have their complementary, the poets, the people who become disciples. And these are seemingly useless people, but they give such a balance to the whole, because they give a grace to the world that we wouldn't have otherwise. Now, this Tao in which this movement of yin and yang take place, Tao itself does not do anything. And yet it leaves nothing undone. You know, it's like the sun is out of our reach. And it doesn't interfere with this planet at all. It doesn't interfere. But thanks to its existence, you know, it conditions and it sustains life. Because of it, we have life. As the olden people used to call it, the eye of God. You know, it kept us alive. Now, it doesn't move. We move, The world moves, light and dark, and moves around it. So we have the seasons, It's there. and doesn't move. So they say that this eternal Tao abides motionless within itself. But in everything, I mean, you know, the sun is shining out there, and in its shining, the energy refracting and reflecting here in this atmosphere and on the grass and the flowers, it is hidden in the grass and the flowers, this motionless, and in you and me. The motionless is what is called a non-action. And the world would disappear like that. Should the action of yin and yang through this non-action end. The motionless, the non-action, does not work. You know, busy work, huh? But there is nothing which does not come about because of it. Nothing appears without it. And they call this action in non-action wei wu wei. And we can experience this wei wu wei within ourselves as a state. Yeah. And it is not this non-action, wu wei. This non-action is not just sitting doing nothing. It is not just being passive and allowing anything to happen to you. And so we should, you know, out of the balance that we have in our lives, we're supposed to live in this wu wei, this non-action, which simply is an abstaining from the activity which is out of harmony with your ongoing process. Non-action. Does not mean doing nothing, like people like to interpret it, doing nothing. Lao Tzu says in his little book, by non-action, everything can be done. And this is what people, you know, so they think, I'm going to sit here and do nothing, and I'm going to do everything. The contradictoriness of this tradition. But at the same time, they want everything to be whole, to be viewed as movement within a whole. To be whole is to be in balance. To be whole is to be holy. And it is to act out of that balance. It is to act out of an equilibrium. That's not action. When you breathe, there is a coming and a going to it. But in that breath, somewhere, if you can find the balance, that balance will show you some pretty wonderful things about yourself. After all, God breathed in our nostrils, and then made us in the image of himself. Yeah. Breath is, we don't pay any attention to it. It's empty. Comes and it goes. And yet it doesn't come and go. It's quite something. Lao Tzu said, the 30 spokes unite in one nave, that is the hub of a wheel, And on that which is non-existent, you know, the hole in the hub, the space in the hub of the wheel, huh? Depends a whole wheel's utility. Yeah. Clay is molded into a vessel, and on that which is non-existent, that is, on the emptiness of the pot, depends the vessel's utility. I'd like to see you use a pot that's already filled up with clay. You can't. It's got to be empty before you can put anything into it. You're going to cook something, you've got to have an empty pot. You want a new idea, you've got to have an empty mind. The useless, huh? By cutting doors and windows, we build a house. And on that which is non-existent, on the empty space within, depends the house's utility. If it were not, you couldn't live in it. You couldn't move in it. Therefore, says Lao Tzu, existence renders actual. But non-existence renders useful. Okay? You understand that? Okay. The visible, that which exists, the existent, the visible, huh? The existent gives form to the world. See? These are our forms, this existent. The invisible, the seeming non-existent, gives its essence and meaning. This is the meaning, the essence. Whatever our senses report, whatever they render to us of existence, is relative. Comes out of this polarity. The non-existence is absolute. It is non-relative. To find this, though, and to recognize this, which we must, we have to go within ourselves. And the search within ourselves is for the essence. So we learn not to look too much to the appearance of things, because that's what our senses are reporting, you know, and maybe could be a little wrong. But look at that, what that appearance covers, what that appearance conceals. There is something there. Why is grass green? There's a reason why our eyes say grass is green. It's hidden in the grass. A blade of grass, I'll tell you. So we don't look then to a diversity of forms. We look at one common life, which we have. Not at the physical shape of man, but at the spirit shaping him. Not so much at the visible multiplicity, but at the invisible unity. See, shift the viewpoint a little bit. The meaning of the visible is in the invisible. The useful has its meaning in the useless. That's what Chuang Tzu is talking about, huh? The essence. And this body, you know, is mostly space. And the space, I guess, is seemingly useless. I guess. I don't think so. There's some water here, and there's a few chemicals, and I think they figured it out once. It was worth 98 cents. Something like that. But how come you don't see all these spaces in this body? How come you don't see all this space in your own body? Space. This is mostly space. Why then is it so hard when I do that? I'm much softer than that. That's hard. Why? And what about the mind? Is it useful? Or is it useless? I mean, speaking now with this, what Chuang Tzu is talking about. Of course, a mind is useful. We couldn't walk from here to the door without it. You know, after a whole day's work, you go home and you go to sleep. You go to bed and you go to sleep. You've moved from the useful to the useless. And you think along all day about all the things you have to do, and maybe you take a half hour out and sit down for meditation, and you move from the useful to the useless. Biggest thing in the world. Oh, you know, and after a good night's sleep, being in this useless world of sleep, in the morning you're all fresh and you're unburdened. You know, the dust is blown away and the mirror is nice and clean again. And because you do have a clarity in the morning, you know, how does that come about? Through the useless sleep. And to a lot of people, it's a waste of time. Yeah. And so moving into this useless meditation, it can give us some tremendous glimpses. But I'm not doing anything. You just simply moved into this silence. And it's better than sleep, because in sleep, you were unconscious, and while you're sitting for meditation, at least you're still conscious, aren't you? Going to sleep, you may have moved into paradise, but you didn't know it because you were unconscious. You were asleep. Now, where do you go when you go to sleep? Something happens to this consciousness. And if we were conscious the whole night long, you would find out some very tremendous things. So you practice going within. And once you know the way, you can, at any moment, you know, move within. You're sitting in a bus, which we don't do much of, but they don't need you in a bus to do anything. You know, the bus driver's there and the other people are there and they're occupied with themselves. They don't need you. So you just sit and you close your eyes a little and you move into the useless, into this silence, And all of a sudden, everything gets very still. And suddenly, you are like you have never been before. You are. But you know, this experience has no value in the marketplace. You can't go and sell it. You can't say, I've had a great meditation. Is anybody ready to buy it? No one's ready to buy. Great religious experiences are not commodities. They're useless. But they bring that which is non-existent into the existent, so that you know both, So that's why they say nirvana is samsara and samsara is nirvana. It's a total, it's a whole, it's a unity. People run around, you know, and they look for the meaning of life. I'm living and my life must have a meaning. Meaning comes about when there's balance. In our Western culture, it's a sign of success if by the age of 40 you have ulcers. And when you get pretty close to 50, you really ought to have your first heart attack. That means you've had a useful life. Huh? And any time after 60, you've just gone away. Huh? But we ask such people, you know, has he ever lived? I mean, lived. Did he have the time to live? Did he have the time to know the useless? And we struggle for success. And, well, you know, and it comes. And then it goes again. And instead of success, we have shame. We shouldn't feel that way. Life changes. It comes and it goes. And we are so egocentralized in the center of it. It all seems to revolve around me. And yet, as egocentralized as we are, there is no place where you can hold out your hand and say, stop, stop, life, you stop here, I've had enough, you know. No, the moving finger writes, and it keeps right on writing. So let's go with it. Huh? Expect change, expect transformation, because it is a transforming process. You know, in the long run, a person who has lived a very useful life turns around all of a sudden and feels cheated. Begins to ask, what am I giving? What am I receiving? I've lost a true identity for some very one-sided ideas. Can you think of anything more useless than God? How often do you use him? Oh, you may talk to him, you may pray to him, you may demand of him, you may beg of him, but use him. Hmm? So the atheists, they say, you know, how can there be a God when God seems so useless? What does he do? Maybe he'll help you and maybe he won't, you know. But the uselessness of God is the very basis of all the utility that goes on. If he stopped being what he is, if we can use these terms, and came down and sat on your shoulder, look at all the other people that would be ignored. You can't do that. No. You know, when Buddha left the palace to go on his search, he'd have said, you know, they speak of it as he renounced the world. Call that. And there are a great number of people who had, like him, who renounced the world. Now, they were not against the world. No, they were not against money. They just said, you know, there are nice, clean gardens over there. The paths are marked and they're pebbled and with the bushes and the lawns and the flowers in their beds. And it's all so neat and nice. It's all mapped out. You know exactly where you're going to go, you think. But they said, instead of that, let me just move into the vast, into an uncharted, where the soul can become vast. You know, because when you don't have any problems, when everything is planned and everything is settled, the soul shrinks. There's no impetus for it to pew, you know. It doesn't have any challenge to look at what is the essence of this all. Hmm? So if we think only of results, you're going to miss. If you look only for meaning in results, for purpose out there, for use, you know, you miss. Have you ever noticed that when you're truly happy, You can all think back at a time when you were truly happy. When you were truly happy, you didn't stop to ask, what is the purpose or what is the use of my happiness? You never asked that. No. When you're in love, you know, do you ask, what is the use of all of this? What is the purpose of all of this? No, you just blithely go along, you're bumbling along, you know, until all of a sudden life catches you up. And, what have I done? When, you know, in the morning, you see the sun rising, and there's a flock of birds also, and they rise, and it's like an arrowhead in the sky, you know. Do you ask, what is the use of all of that? What is the purpose of all of that? No. And the flower that blooms all alone in the night, and it fills the whole night, the whole evening with its fragrance. Do you ask, what is the use of that? You just enjoy. What is the purpose of it? There isn't any purpose. There isn't any use. Use and purpose are part of the thinking mind, and we do need it. But nature, existence, life, no? Life exists mindlessly. The thinking mind is constantly sorting out, this is useful, do this. This is useless. Don't do this. And we need to do this. But also we need this meditation which represents the useless. And then when the mind is needed, use it. But now you've got a sharper, clearer mind for the meditation. And then when that, then you plunge into life itself again. And come up refreshed, to use. You become a balance between the use and the non-use. And you know that balance transcends both. Okay, I'm sorry I kept you so long. I didn't realize I was going to drone on for so long. And now may the peace and the power that passeth all understanding hold us and keep us in the love of the Christed consciousness while we are seemingly separate one from another. And I thank you very much.
If you find Lola's talks valuable, more will be posted in weeks to come.